I got delved into the world of agricultural plastics in 1999. My program, the Southern Waste Information Exchange, is a 501c3. We're a nonprofit that assists industry and municipalities with waste issues. And in 1999, I was tagged by the Department of Environmental Protection to bring in a focus group to talk about agricultural plastics, because it is problematic in some areas of the state due to the amount of material that's generated and how it's handled, and I'll show you some pictures of that in a few minutes. And so what became very apparent as a result of that meeting is that agricultural plastics, mainly mulch film, is produced in large volumes, specifically for the state of Florida, and California is one of the two largest regions that it's grown, or used, I should say. And it's traditionally not been recycled because of the amount of contamination, and that contamination mainly tends to be soil and water, and we'll get into a little bit of that. But it might be helpful to kind of give you some idea of the scope of what it is that we're talking about when you talk about plastic culture, and you talk about the use of plastics in the growing of products. I'm going to provide you a little bit of data, and this is the data that I referenced. Last year, we held the first Agricultural Plastics Recycling Conference. It was an initiative that I worked with, brought in from Lois to Keith and some other folks within the industry to talk about this. There's another organization called TISPA that has to deal with the pesticide industry, and there's a lot of work that has gone on by TISPA to look at plastics, how do you deal with plasticide containers and so forth at the end of life. And I wanted to take it a step further and bring in traditional recyclers to get their interest and to expand the markets. Is what's very key, as Lois pointed out, is the markets for this material. You've got to have some place to go with it if you want to make it successful. And so last year we conveyed a conference in Marco Island, Florida. I wanted to be close to where the majority of the film was grown so I could hope to bring in the farmers. And I was hoping for 100 people. We ended up with over 200 people, so I was quite pleased with that. And it just shows that there is a level of interest out here. In 2 weeks, we're going to be holding another conference in San Diego. Again, it's going to be the second event, and we're moving it out to San Diego because there's a lot of plastics in California. Again, the focus on the generation of this material and how it's being used. You saw some of the slides of what Lois has put together in terms of collection programs and some of the potential end markets for that material and some of the companies that are actively looking at this material and doing something with it. Real quickly, types of agricultural plastics. You have films, you have nursery containers, you have HD agricultural pesticide containers. The market, 1997, if you look at horticultural films, you have roughly 126 million pounds on an annual generation. Total market itself is 816 million pounds. I'm not going to go into great detail because I understand that these slides are going to be available to you all at the end of the conclusion of this conference or post-conference. So I'll just kind of skip this because I really want to get to the pictures, which I think is the meat and potatoes of what we're talking about. And it's something, as you can tell, I'm really excited to work in this area because I just find it fascinating. A little bit of a geek when it comes to that, I guess. Horticultural plastic film, the bulk of it, as you see, is in the greenhouse and nursery films, the mulch films, and then greenhouse and nursery films follow that up. Livestock plastics, you talk about silage bags, bunker silo covers, polypropylene bale twine. It's a tremendous amount of material that's produced there. Nursery containers, you're looking at, from the majority of the standpoint, blow molded nursery pots. You also have injected and molded polypropylene pots. So there's quite a bit of material there. Horticultural film plastics, that's a repeat slide. Miscellaneous things like covers, shade covers, barriers, and bags represent about 41 million pounds on an annual production. HD pesticide containers, roughly about 31 million pounds per year. How is it typically managed? Well, your options in terms of getting rid of this material are landfill, burn or bury on site, and in some areas it's legal, in some areas it's illegal. You have waste conversion technologies. Lois showed you the slide of Agilex. There are a couple of other companies that are involved in that whole arena where you're basically taking through a pyrolysis process or gasification process and converting those plastics back into a syngas or into actual fuel itself. You have reuse options and you have recycling options. Let me just kind of go through and give you some examples of some of the plastics that we're talking about. Agricultural plastic mulch film, typically used in the growing of tomatoes and strawberries and other vegetables like bell peppers and melons. Keith has showed you the slide from the firm in Guatemala where the majority of their work is in the growing of melons. Drip tape, which is used to provide irrigation to the plants themselves, and this is usually used in conjunction with mulch film. Underneath the mulch film, they'll run a drip tape line to provide water to the plants. You have irrigation pipes, which is used to provide the water to the drip tape. You've got things like bale wrap, silage bag covers, bunker covers, pesticide containers, intermediate bulk containers, IBCs, as they're typically known within the industry, and this typically contains large volumes of pesticides or herbicides or whatever it is that the farm might be using. You have nursery trays, nursery pots, greenhouse covers, storage totes. From the mulch film standpoint, which is really the bulk of what I want to talk about, is we're looking at a potential of about 70 million pounds per year. Drip tube and tape, roughly 37 million pounds. Large diameter tubing, 17 million pounds. And unfortunately, very little of this is recycled. And I can tell you from speaking from Florida's perspective that the bulk of that material is probably burnt in the field at the end of the growing season. Mulch film drip tape tubes, in terms of the markets for this material, about 5 years ago we did a research project where we looked at market development. And so we worked with a couple of farmers to grab their material at the end of the growing season, bale it, similar to what Lois was doing with the big baler, but we used something called a tobacco baler, And we went out in the field, and I'll show you some pictures of that, where we bale the product and then turn around and try to find markets for the material. I've sent product to China, Vietnam, Malaysia, Mexico, Korea, India, of all places, Romania, and then several places here in the United States, all trying to find an end market for the material. And as Lois will tell you, your market today may not be your market tomorrow because they come and go. Just a little bit on the production of agricultural film markets. If you look at what was produced in 2012 and 2017, you can see that it is a growing industry. More and more film is used each and every year, so the opportunity is there. And the same thing with other agricultural films. If you look at the greenhouse film and other various mulch films, you definitely see an increase. So there's an opportunity there. What we want to try to solve is how the problem is typically resolved. And this is what we don't want. If you look at this picture, Lois talked about, when she talked about the burning of plastics in the field, she talked about air emissions. I can also tell you that those emissions reach the ground. So here you have, this is a tomato field where at the end of the season they will pile the film every 100 feet, what's called the cut-through. If you ever look at a tomato field, they've got a row where you can walk in between the rows, and it's a cut-through. And they will pile the plastic up and add a little diesel fuel to it and torch it. And so you have all that residual plastics and emissions that you saw in Lois' slides are on that ground where they're going to grow next year's crop. So it's a little bit of problematic. What is hard to believe and hard to fathom is that in the state of Florida, we actually have an exemption in the Solid Waste Act that was created in 1988 that allows the farmers to burn this plastic. Now, I'm talking 40,000 tons of plastic disposed of every year in the state of Florida. And up until recently, the bulk of that was burnt in the field. You have other products like agricultural twine. Here it's used in the holding up of the plants to the stakes. At the end of the growing season, the way they deal with this is they've got these torches that they will go down and they'll burn that twine off. Fortunately, that twine burns pretty clean from some of the air emission study, the data that I've seen on it. So I think from an environmental standpoint, although it'd be nice to figure out a way to collect that twine, I can tell you it's almost impossible. It would be very, very labor intensive to go in there and cut that twine out. This provides a quick solution to removing of that twine. Agricultural mulch, again, as I had indicated at the end of the growing season, a couple of slides I'm going to show you are from the tomato industry in the Quincy area. Josh and Bainbridge is where we did the bulk of our research. Other growing areas in the state of Florida were going to be in South Florida near Collier County, and then in the Manatee area and the Hillsborough area where they're growing strawberries. The way that the film has typically been pulled is they will send the workers in and they'll pull by hand and they'll pile it up, like I said, at the cut through every 100 feet or so. And then what we ended up doing is using a vacuum baler where we'd come back in and bale in the field. Small compression downstroke baler provides a nice neat bale, roughly anywhere from 1,200 to 1,500 pounds. And what you think is 1,200 to 1,500 pounds of plastic, it's not. That bale comprises roughly 60 to 70% soil and moisture. So on average, there's the film is used roughly about 250, just depending on the millage rate of the film, 210 to 250 pounds per acre. So that'll kind of give you an estimate. If you want to know on the agricultural film how much your area might generate, and you need to find out how much acreage there is, and then you can use that conversion of 210 to 250 pounds per acre. And then you need to find out if they're growing two crops. Some rotate crops, so they'll grow two different. They'll pull that old film off and replant, or they might leave the film down and come back after, like with a tomato crop, they might come back with a watermelon crop immediately afterwards, and they'll leave that crop down. It is important in some of the research that we've shown is if from a recycling standpoint, you don't want to leave that plastic in the field too long because it starts to degrade and the sunlight and UV light hits it, and when you start pulling it up, it'll start to tear, which is really problematic. So if you're going to have a really successful program, you want to have that plastic be able to pull at the end of the growing season as quickly as the farmer is done with collecting their material, their produce. We talked a little bit about the soil moss, soil problem related to the film. This is a photograph, and I want to kind of show you what this film looks like under a microscope. That crystal-looking product is a grain of sand, so that tells you how small this is. Now, what I want you to do is you can kind of see the lines, a little hard to see, but that is clean film right there. They provide this rigid square pattern into the film to add rigidity to that film so that they can stretch it when they're running it over the mounds. But those little squares that you see actually act as a suction cup. So the moisture hits that film and it tracks not sand as you think it, but it's a fine particulate, it's a dust particulate that fills in those grooves. And so that's where the wear and tear, when you talk about sand and soil, one of the things that is very problematic is on the traditional recycling side, when you talk about grinding and shredding, it's very, very problematic, and I'll highlight that in one of the case studies that we talked about on the cement plant. One of the questions was raised about, you know, using a cement plant for air emissions and so forth. And the cement plants, fortunately, burn at very, very high temperatures. Lois, on one of her slides, showed on typical incineration, a waste-to-energy facility, which you might have in your community, burns at around 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit. A cement plant, and 95% of the cement plants here in the United States burn coal as their main fuel source. Agricultural plastics burn much higher than coal if they're clean. You can see some of these bags that are in the background there, and one of them says 14,980 BTUs. This one on the far right is 21,416 BTUs. Average coal BTU value for most of the cement plants is around 12,000, so it's much hotter than coal. It is much cleaner than coal. Because of the high emissions you don't have that are in that kiln at 25 to 2800 degrees, the emissions and the chances of dioxins being created are eliminated. So it's a much cleaner fuel, and the same thing with tires, much cleaner than coal. The other way that this material has been handled is be put out on the back 40. And so there are a number of different piles around the state of Florida that look just like this, and they're not little piles. This is about a 10-acre site that was in North Georgia. This site has been cleaned up. That was there for about 20 years, and the farmer year in and year out thought he was going to have a source to be recycled. He didn't want to burn his plastic, and I commend him on that, but he ended up with a pile that eventually the Georgia Department of Natural Resources came down on him and said, you need to remove the pile or you're going to be faced with a $10,000 a day fine. So he ended up, the bulk of this material went to a landfill, unfortunately. You have other areas in the state of Florida that have come up with what's known as a monofill. This is an ag fill monofill. There's roughly, last recall I count, there's roughly 70,000 tons of baled ag film underneath those three piles that you see there. This is in Collier County, Florida, waiting for somebody to come up with an invention to figure out how to clean this stuff and use it. When you're dealing with some of these piles, it's very problematic in management of it. It comes up like spaghetti when you start picking it up. So it's not like, you know, and Lois, you kind of hit on this with the little adventure that you ran with having the farmers bring their material to you. If they pile it up and it's not managed correctly, it's very problematic to handle. Again, in terms of, you know, some of the piles, how you deal with it. When you're moving it from the field, this is how we would typically send material. A lot of the material that we exported from our project went overseas, and so we had these shipping containers that we would load all the way up, take pictures through the process, a quarter way through, halfway through, and then finally the last picture of the container, and then with the doors closed and sealed, and that's how it's sent off to verify the validity of what's inside. Our project led to me finding this gentleman right here. His name is Norman Milner. Norman comes out of the pulp and carpet industry with regard to taking carpet, paper, fiber, and rolling it. And a lot of his technology, you see these great big rolls of carpet or great big rolls of paper, if you've ever seen, that come out of a paper mill or so forth. That's Norman's technology. He retired a number of years ago, but is a farmer at heart, grew up from the farming community, and didn't want to retire. He's 78 years old, and he is one of the smartest men I know. He decided he was going to get involved and has been working with me to try to figure out a way to go after that ag film and manage it a little bit differently. And so what he has come up with is automated removal technology to pull the film out of the field. And you can see these are nice little bundles. And what we would do is go down in between the road for the tomato industry, and we're pulling from both sides. And the way they would grow the crops and the rows, there'll be like six rows on right side, six rows on the left side, and then the road go in between. And so we would just basically go down and stop at each cut through and pull. You could also pull from the side of the row, the end of the row, and we've pulled up to 800 linear feet at one time. This is the roller, and you can see here that you're getting a really, really tight spool, which addresses, you know, one of the key points that Lois touched on, is you've got to be able to get the material and manage it and put it in a shipping container where you can get 40,000 tons on it, or 40,000 pounds, excuse me, and that's what this end product does. What is also key here is trying to leave the best you can the amount of soil and water that is on that film after you pull it up. You want to leave it in the field. And so through trial and error, we have kind of figured out a way to leave the bulk of that soil and water on the site, which is where you want it. In terms of pulling it, in the tomato industry, we're working, you can see here, this is one of his pieces of equipment that actually goes down in between the two rows. And if this is, cherry tomatoes. So they're about 6 feet tall when they finally end up at their full height. And Norm has got this piece of equipment it's a 36-inch width piece of equipment that runs down in between the rows. He's got a splitter blade on each side, so he's splitting the mound in the middle next to the tomato stakes and then pulling the film up behind him. Leave the film there and then turn around and come back and use the other piece of equipment to roll it up. So this is a picture of the film after it's been cleaned, or the film. The other thing that he has worked on, and this is a relatively new piece of equipment, and Keith, I think I alluded to this, so I'm going to show you something. This is used for the strawberry fields, and it is you can see it's hooked up to the tractor, three-point hitch, and you can see the blade down at the bottom, that yellow round circle there, goes in to actually cut the row. If you can envision, there's no stakes to deal with a strawberry field, so we're cutting the row right in the center and going straight down. And these two black wheels you see here take both ends of that row and cut and pull straight up and then run it back down. And then the same thing, we're leaving that film on the ground and then we'll come back through and roll it. He's got two pieces of equipment that we've come up with. One is this one, and then we also have another unit that actually has a roller, so you can go back through and roll the film up and get good tight coverage on that field. Lois, you kind of touched on this. Some of the key recycling players, you definitely have Command Packaging, Encore Recycling out in California, Delta Plastics, Recycle Poly, and Flag in Florida. Those are Recycle Poly and Flag are the two new players that have just started up within the last year and a half. Both of those facilities, I think Recycle Poly has got about $8 million in their plant. It's German-based technology. Flag has got roughly, I think, $3 or $4 million in their plant now, and I believe it's kind of a mixture of Italian and German technology. You've got Film Clean. Norm has come up with a dry cleaning process similar to a little bit different in a German company called Moss, where they're using dry cleaning. It's basically a way to centrifuge through forced air and circulate the film out and have the soil drop off. And then from that standpoint, we come into a densification process and hopes with going into a manufactured process down the road. You then have companies, again, like Agilex, Polyflow, Rational Energy. There's a host of companies that have identified agricultural plastics as a feedstock for this whole gasification pyrolysis conversion technology. And I think there's some opportunities there. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, who's going to be the first to come to market. Agilex has got a facility in Oregon, and I know they have done some research with agricultural plastics, but I think they've also run into some problems. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Future needs, information, access, and exchange for surely needed. Burn solutions probably mandates to stop the burning of the material in Florida. industry sustainability requirements, and this is one thing that I see starting to happen right now. You've got Whole Foods, Walmart, and Whole Foods and Walmart are really the key players right now that are starting to put a little pressure on the growers, at least in Florida's perspective, to stop the burning of that film at the end of the growing season. So, that mandate may not come from a government mandate. It may come from an industry side, which is probably the better way for it to happen. So I think there's some opportunities there. Coordinated industry efforts and get more people together to talk about how you deal with this problem. Cleaning solutions, whether it's dry cleaning or wet cleaning. I'm delighted to see the slide that you showed. I'd actually like to go up and see that wet line. I really would. And then development of the waste energy or the plastics to oil options. We need a good player to come on and have a developed plant in place that can show success of using this type of material for a feedstock. Promotion of ag plastic recycling facilities, pesticide residuals research, open burning of plastic research. These are some of the things that I think that are also needed. Fostering closing the loop, making other products out of it. We've got two presentations next week and or a week after in San Diego that are going to be talking about ag film to new ag film. Delta does a little bit of that where they're taking some of their ag plastics and so does Command Packaging and making other film out of it, but not ag film going back down on the ground. So from what I've seen, because of the contamination levels, it's very difficult to start blowing film that thin with the dust particulate that's going to be in that product. But there are some folks that say they can do it, so I'm interested to see how that translates into reality. Use of state and federal funds for market development. It is problematic both in California and other areas of the state, and the states, mainly Florida. And it would be helpful to have state funds also help develop markets in this area, which is one of the things that I've asked our legislature to get involved with. This is the show that we're doing in San Diego, the 19th and 21st. If you have an interest, I've got some brochures up here. We're doing actually two conferences back-to-back. The 17th through the 19th is a waste conversion technology conference, so we're talking about plastic to oil technology conversion, gasification, anaerobic digestion. So it's a whole gambit of conversion technologies, not just talking about plastics, but all kinds of things. And then following that back up immediately afterwards is our Agricultural Plastics Recycling Conference. And that's it. There is my contact information. So.
Yes, sort of in summary, if sort of put all this together, in my mind here, Lois's work primarily, but not completely, addressing the smaller growers in the more dispersed areas. And some of you out there come from that background. And I think her ideas there of how to organize and how to address that solution. That's a lot of growers. It's not the large number of pounds that come from large growers, but it's a problem nonetheless. Very widespread, and in West Virginia or Kentucky or Ohio or New York State or whatever, that's the small grower. And getting these sort of community efforts going, like Lewis gave example of, that's a tough one, but it's one that's I think we need to solve. And probably one that you out in the field run into more often than you do the big growers. And then I address in the Guatemalan case study, similar to what Gene addressed, as large growers. And I see more progress being made with the large growers for the reasons that we all three have mentioned, because you have a concentration, you have a greater need because the concentration creates greater problems and so forth. So I think it's important to realize and recognize that in those situations, in the large grower situations, solutions have developed. Encore Packaging is recycling. I visited their plant. I saw it recycling mulch film. Delta Plastics, who they were supposed to be here, but they missed that plane coming out of Little Rock to be here. Delta Plastics is recycling. And the ones in Florida, I don't know whether they are taking or not. Are they, Gene?
They're both taking, but one is supposedly not operating at efficiency yet, and the other one is, but they're producing, I think, a pellet that they're selling.
Okay, so...
Flag is producing 40 million pounds
a year.
Okay, so in the large, in the, at least is the way I see it, in the large grower arena, or the concentrated use arena, there things are happening. Again, they'll be crimped by the low price of oil, and that's probably temporary, but we don't know how temporary. But and the other one is more of a community effort that Lois talked about, and that has potential, but it takes a lot more coordination, I guess would be one way to put it. What do you folks see out there? Are you seeing anything in the field that you could add to this? Go ahead.
Silage covers, yeah, and hold, you know, where they stored the grains and the hay.
That's not incredibly concentrated, right? As far as geographic area, would that be a little more dispersed than say most of our film plastics?
Yeah.
But I mean, the horse film plastics,
right?
The horse film is generally concentrated in California and Florida, but used elsewhere. The dairy plastics are concentrated in dairy states. The first research I did, I estimated 50% penetration of plastic in dairy, and I was way off, I think it's probably over 95%. But the actual numbers are somewhat hard to get. All told, we're probably talking all of agricultural plastics is no more than 2-4% of plastic.
One thing that came up, and this is from my research, and we'll see if Lois and Gene agree. A lot of times people will ask, are there pesticides on the plastic? My research, and the latest one was a study done, was a research project done by Hussein Ajiwa at his laboratory in Salinas, was, and he did it for Encore, was that there were no pesticide residues on clean plastic. Now, the residues in the soil, if the soil is attached to the plastic, would be similar to the residues that are in the soil as it is, which presumably, if they applied correctly, would not be at an illegal level. But there is a perception or the question raised very legitimately, are there poisons on the plastic? And from my research and an earlier study done in Spain, I understand came up with the same conclusion, but Hussein Ajiwa just recently did this study and he found no residues.
Chief, we also did that. We had a collection project, and that is the first claim that I want. If we're creating markets, are we creating a problem for the recyclers to deal with this stuff? So we worked with the toxicologist named Christy at FSU, and we took samples of all the film that we were collecting and came up with a protocol that how you sample the film, what are you going to sample for? There were pesticides there. There are pesticides present, but not in exceeds of like soil, groundwater, guides concentration. So, and more importantly, not in exceeds of like OSHA issues. So there are pesticides there, no doubt there are pesticides there, but they're not in from the research that we've looked at, not in the concentrations that cause concern for environmental health issues.
Any more questions? And thank you for your discussions. At the meeting that we're going to have, we mentioned earlier at 1 o'clock, we'll be talking about what our project will be for this group in the next conference. So I hope as many as you can come there and help us in that situation.